Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit ARRCLED.com.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that LeelaQ's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. LeelaQ has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use LeelaQ for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Hey, it's Dave Asprey with Bulletproof Radio. Today's cool fact of the day is that if you're worried that you might have killed too many brain cells while you were in college drinking, maybe you don't have to worry about that. It's because brain cells in the learning part of your brain and in the memory part of your brain can regrow themselves. They actually can regenerate. And scientists recently figured out that they can grow stem cells that turn into those parts of your brain.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat Cold Tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Today's guest is writer, producer of one of TV's biggest shows, NCIS Los Angeles. He's also a friend, and his name's Dave Kallstein. Dave, welcome to Bulletproof Radio.
Awesome to be here.
You're an enigma of a guy. You look sort of like a cross between like a samurai and a Tibetan.
Oh, yeah.
You've got great ink. You're a martial artist. You're a super successful guy here in town. And you also do neurofeedback.
Yeah.
You're interesting.
Well, you know, I think one of the reasons why you say interesting and one of the reasons why maybe people respond to my energy is because I had kind of gone as far as I could go in my career, left to my own devices. Everybody has like a personal success formula they work, and eventually they hit a wall. And then it's time to self-examine, and it's like, wow, I might need to go to other places to figure out how to make myself better. And by better, I don't mean value. I mean, like, how do I enjoy life more? And so martial arts is one of those things for me. And it was through martial arts, actually, I found you. I train in an art called Sayok Kali, which is a Filipino martial arts, a family system from the Sayok family. And after a training session one day, one of the master level instructors said to me, there's this coffee with butter in it. You should check it out. And my first reaction was kind of like, well, what? But then a lot of what we do in martial arts is like, what? You know, so yeah. I jumped in with both feet and I went home, and my first cup of Bulletproof coffee was actually made with salted Kerrygold, because I didn't know. I still drank it and I felt awesome. And ever since then, that was sort of my gateway drug into your culture. You know, I got really interested in heart rate variability. I got the vibration plate, started eating Bulletproof, and then neurofeedback was sort of one of the last places I went with it because, first of all, it was a little expensive. I am not one of those guys that came into the Bulletproof culture an expert in neurofeedback. I never really meditated that much either. So really the first time I did it was when I hooked myself up to a Neuroptimal. So by that point, I'm like, I'm just gonna kind of take this plunge here. I loved what it was, and I started listening to more of the podcasts you did on neurofeedback, and which led me to the 40 Years of Zen program. And that, you know, just judging from the awesome response of all the people at the conference, is something that people are very interested in because it's mysterious, it's expensive, and it's, you know, very effective, as you say. You said it changed your life. So that was sort of the most powerful experience I've had and the most unusual experience I've had in terms of becoming like more elite performer.
So if you're listening and you've never heard of neurofeedback, it's the idea that you can get electrical signals off your brain, and we've known this for close to 50 years, but you can play them through a computer, turn them into sounds, and then play the sounds back to you. So your brain waves can become violins or pianos or various other sounds. And when you do it, your brain becomes able to know that it's getting a signal from itself. And then you can learn to take charge of it. And the first one you mentioned, the Neuroptimal there, is one of the technologies that I write about on the site. There's lots of info on the site there. And this is something that you did at home.
Yeah, I bought a Neuroptimal unit. My girlfriend and I both use it. We still use it. And it's really, you know, I mean, there is paste that you put on your head to get the electrodes on, but the effects are great. You know, it's really easy to bring it to your house, and I think you've talked in the past about sharing it with other people, sharing the cost, which makes a lot of sense. So if I was just going to use it for me, then it wouldn't have really made much sense. But the fact that my girlfriend and I can both share it is awesome.
It comes down to like $18 a session, which is why I like that one, because you can put the electrodes on yourself. You just stick one here, and some clips on your ears, and then you use it. How often do you use it now that you've done some really advanced training?
Well, when I went to 40 Years of Zen, I'd had about 100 sessions under my belt. And like most people that are in your community, I started out like doing 3 sessions a week and like want to do more, but you're not really supposed to. And that's the thing about neurofeedback is you don't really have to. You're not supposed to work hard at it. It's supposed to just happen, which for a goal-driven person like myself at the time was difficult because I'm like, I want to do 100 sessions a day. But that kind of led me to realize the scientific part of what we do only takes you so far.
Yeah.
Eventually, you kind of have to confront the unknown. The first time you try Bulletproof coffee, it's the unknown. Yeah. And you feel awesome. The first time you put electrodes on your head, it's also unknown. So if you voluntarily choose to confront that, great rewards may be waiting for you. Like with martial arts, it's the same thing. Nobody wants to go train martial arts the first day. In my job in Hollywood, I remember the first day I had to walk onto a set and produce an episode. It was 6 years ago, the first time I'd ever done it. I was young. I was scared. And it was just it was a very unnerving experience. And so we need to sometimes go away from the scientific thing and open our minds up to the unknown. In the same way that I stepped through the door on that soundstage and ended up doing pretty good on that day, you know. But you have to make the leap. If you don't make the leap, you will live a life like everybody else, which I don't want to do.
You weren't doing that before you discovered neurofeedback by a long shot. You were already doing PsyOC.
Yeah.
Tell me more about PsyOC, because my take on you and having gotten to know you reasonably well is like you don't stop. Like you're really intense. You pay a lot of attention to stuff and you jump in with both feet and you try it and you sort of get what's there for you. So what made you do that with PsyOC? What is PsyOC? Let's talk about that and how you got as involved as you are there, and then let's see how you've done other things in life.
Well, the biggest distinction I can make with PsyOC is I did martial arts before. A lot of guys haven't done martial arts before they train PsyOC, but I had done Thai boxing for many, many years, and we don't use weapons in that. It's a sport, and in most martial arts, the weapons practice is the most advanced elite level, because it's a weapon and you can hurt someone badly from the get-go. In PsyOC, in your first class, you learn how to use a knife, which is sort of counterintuitive. Why would you start with a knife when you can't even punch? Well, the way we think in PsyOC is you de-escalate from the perfect form. And once you go from there, you are equipped to deal with everything else. Why would you want to practice something that's inferior? So if you can work that knife, you can work everything else. And the blade, this is also very individual to PsyOC, the blade is a learning tool. there are consequences to getting cut. And now we don't use live blades in a first class, but we do teach you how to handle them. And the trainers, as you felt, there's enough feedback there to let you know, oh, that little chill down my spine. You know, and now I've got your attention. Now you're ready to learn because your mind is occupied by this very scary looking blade. And you're hearing about vital targets and all these things. And really, all you're learning is how to learn.
I really enjoyed the training. I mean, you were kind enough to bring in Nick, you know, a PSIOC master.
Yeah.
He's
a full instructor.
Full instructor. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Am I using the wrong title?
I'm glad you brought this up because our master level instructors are called Tuhans.
Okay.
And there's not many of them in the world. Okay. And these are guys that have like 20, 30 years of training. And Nick is very good. He is not at that level yet.
Okay.
But he's a solid guy. I just want to make that
a senior instructor. Okay, yeah. Cool. Got it. I understand the hierarchies yet, so. Yeah.
Well, like any group, it's important to have hierarchies because if you don't and there's no rules, you have no protocols. And it's chaos. And next thing you know, you got guys putting on t-shirts and selling their own stuff. Tell me that sounds familiar, Dave. With no protocols, you got people coming to your conference and selling things that may or may not benefit you when it's your thing. You know?
Yeah, if they're selling, you know, chocolate frosted sugar bombs at the conference,
exactly.
I'm like, you're welcome to sell them, but this isn't the place for that.
Yeah, and one of the things we do as a group is like, it's all about group dynamics, right? Because if all I can do is teach you to become a more deadly individual, I have failed. Because chances are, when you are in life, you will be with other people. It's all about it's a tribal art. Therefore, we train you to make those around you better. Our definition of mastery isn't Mr. Miyagi on his own. It's how you transfer these formulas to other people.
Now, if people think you might be spouting BS here, like you participate in training of some of the world's most elite militaries.
Yeah,
correct?
Well, yeah, the PSIOC Tactical Group, they train elite law enforcement and military. Obviously, we can't get too specific with that, but the formulas have worked on that level, and now we're actually making headway in Hollywood as well. PSIOC Mastery Brand is offering the same kind of, training to more civilian-minded clients, and I myself have worked with some of the PSIOC guys, and we've sold a couple TV shows as well. So the formulas that work for the physical combative world also work in the mental world, and we only know that because we do it. I know it's a little, that's what people need to kind of get over. It's like, how can this blade formula actually work in a room as well? Well, we are never not armed, right? So you walk into a meeting, and the same tempo that works in the blade can work in that meeting, because now the people are the fight, even though it's not a physical fight.
It's interesting, when I went and I trained in your garage, you were there, you had another person who was an observer, and you had the instructor there.
Yeah.
And it's awesome because you're using shiny steel knives, unsharpened knives, but rather than a piece of wood, which is a common training thing, and I've been in classes like that before,
right.
Which doesn't neurologically trigger you. I actually had a knife pulled on me a couple times when I was a kid. You know, and at the time, you're like, this is a life or death situation. Like, it leaves a mental impression, so you're likely to recoil from a blade like that. In fact, we naturally do that even if no one's ever threatened you with a knife, because you know that can kill you. It's deadly. But I found that my nervous system doesn't differentiate between a shiny, unsharpened knife that will not cut me even if I drag it really hard over myself versus a real knife. So to stand there, it was kind of unnerving.
Right.
You know, someone's standing there holding a knife against you, and you know you're just going to block, but it looks like a knife. It's weighted like a knife. It has the energy of a knife in it versus a piece of wood, which is like, oh, I just know it's not a knife. Like, the difference there was very palpable neurologically.
Yeah, there's not much left to chance with the way that PSIOC teaches. Something you talked about before, and I'm glad you brought it up, the three-person teaching method.
Yeah.
That's something we do. It's called the feeder-receiver-observer relationship. So in that situation, the instructor was the feeder. He was feeding you information, controlling the room. You were the receiver. You were receiving information. And I was the observer. I was watching from an objective point of view how the lesson was going. I was looking at you to see what kind of responses you were having to maybe communicate to the instructor. Maybe we should take him this way because he's having this kind of reaction. And with the shiny blade that you were talking about, we like to use shiny blades because when you're having a knife pulled on you in the street, it will most likely be a shiny blade that looks just like that. And you train. How you train is how you will be in reality. And we don't make the delusion that we think that we'll be 100% in training. I'm sorry, in real life. You sink to the level you're training. So we kind of believe that maybe 30% of what you can be. So, and it's a lot of subconscious responses as well. So every time you see that mirrored knife is a time that you become more familiar with it. So if it ever happens to you in real life, you'll have those reps burn. Everyone talks about 10,000 reps, right? to gain mastery, I guess. I actually don't agree with that, because I want to know what kind of reps is that person burning. What is your definition of a rep? Because it's not about quantity, it's quality. And something I actually just said in my talk at the conference was, I don't burn 10,000 reps. My life is one rep, and it never ends until I'm dead. And that means I have to be extremely mindful of every piece of my day. My day, does your day start when you get out of bed? Does it start when you make coffee? Does it start when you put your clothes on and go to work? Or does it start before you open your eyes with your first conscious thought? Because that's probably going to set you up the whole day. Well, if that's the case, then maybe your first step of the day is before you go to bed the night before. Because the unconscious is also a very alive place. And so the way we train is, if we're going to set you up for your day to train, that rep, it starts the night before. What is the last thing you think of before you go to sleep? And everybody has their own way. Gratitude's a big deal for me.
Yeah.
Because I do not want to waste any time, because it's only one rep, you know?
That's such an elegant way of thinking about it. It's just one rep. The other thing that impressed me about Sayoc is that the idea of a pattern, and I've done some training in judo. I'm not a mixed martial artist by a long shot. You know, I'm a computer guy.
Yeah.
But it's really interesting. None of the other forms that I've seen taught focus as intently on almost like a template,
mm-hmm.
whereas there's usually a movement. So
right.
It's always training a movement. But the whole training that we did was really about, like, it's here, then here, then here, then here. And rather than sort of, you know, paint, wipe on, wipe off, Karate Kid kind of stuff, and then you magically put a body there, it was targeted.
And
the idea of training by pattern and template is way more intuitive for people. They learn better that way, but they also, I think, embody it neurologically faster that way. Is that conscious?
Yeah, it is. And by the way, I am not a professional martial artist. I'm like you. I'm just a writer.
Yeah.
You know, and so I was not some super warrior when I showed up. So I was in your position as well. I was overwhelmed by the information. So you talk about a template. What are you learning? Most martial arts is like, cut them in the neck. What we do is we tell you exactly where you're thrusting. And in that template, you can learn many things. It's not just where the places to strike on the body are. You also learn in that process where you have to protect yourself from being struck. You learn what you do to somebody. What's the trauma? You also learn how to save someone if they had that trauma done to them. So what you saw, that template, it's called 3 of 9. It's actually a formula that teaches you many things, because then we don't have to waste time saying, here's a medical management piece, because you already learned that in 3 of 9. We don't have to teach you how to draw a blade, because you've already burned so many reps of 3 of 9 that you know how to do it. So one rep of that one template, you're going through so many things in your head. And that's, look, you can call it hacking, or you can call it an ideal rep. Because the more things you can accomplish in that one motion, the faster you will learn and the quicker you will become a master. Something that I love about Sayoc is, in other martial arts that I've done, it's like the master level people were always like, well, if you work really hard, you'll eventually get to where we are. And Sayoc Kali, the Tuhans, they all say, if you train Sayoc, you will be a master faster than I was. Because in our culture, it's not about how good you are. It's you judge a master not by how good he is, but how many masters has he made. And that's why everybody ends up pursuing a path of apprentice instructor, associate instructor, because if you don't want to teach, then we don't really have a lot of use for you. Because that means you're keeping it all inside for yourself. It's all about the self. Where are other people? You know? But we also don't want to create clones. You know, there's a lot of different things going on out there at the conference that are awesome. But ultimately, everybody has to bring their own spin to it. If everybody came and they had your way of thinking, you'd be like, oh, this is boring.
It'd be super boring,
You know? And in the beginning, and this is like anything that you try out, you want to be really good and you want to move like your masters move, whether it's a corporate job or martial arts or my job. But what I realized is that in the Sayoc culture, my masters do not want me to move like them. They want me to move like me. So my reps can then add to the formula. It can make the tribe better. So today, when I gave my speech, that may have been a template.
A template that would then be teachable and communicable, so you could talk to someone else about a speech?
Well,
or you were using a template you'd already learned to give
the speech.
The
speech today was the exact same template that you learned your first day of class.
The 3 of 9.
Yeah, it was our formulas. It's like, what is a formula, right? One of the qualities of a formula is that they are universal, which means they can apply anywhere. So that lesson you learned with the blade, I did that today in the speech. So, and obviously that's a whole different discussion, but we don't teach formulas that are not universal. If they're not universal, they cannot be a formula. So what I'm talking about is pretty heady stuff right now. And we always say, you have to earn the reps. Like, there is stuff in PSYOC that I can't do. I may intellectually know it, but I have not physically earned those reps yet. There are guys that have been doing it much longer than me, and they know how to do it. As smart as I am, we unite the physical, the mental, the emotional, the sensory. It all comes together. Like, a lot of people will go to something like a Tony Robbins type thing, and they'll have an awesome weekend, and afterwards they'll be like, well, it all went away after a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Like, I was on this high and this and that, or any of those kind of self-help type things. And for us, that doesn't work because the rep never ends, right? So what's the one thing that's missing from all those other Tony Robbins self-help type things is the fact that you're not doing anything with your body. You know, there's nothing that you can bring away with it. There's no emotional subconscious connection. You never had the stimuli of the blade. That's why we use the blade as a learning tool. That's why the blade has been used as a learning tool since like primal times.
Right.
And so you're never learning just one thing. Like, something that you always hear students say is, man, you know, I got shotgun with information, and then like 3 days later, I realized what you were actually saying. And that's how we know they're learning, because there's no way you can process it the first time. Any deep formula, it has to, we target the subconscious basically. So, because life is short, we want to make you good fast, and we want it to be about mastery. We are on a mission to mastery. It's not even really about the knife thing in the end. It's about how do you live your life.
When you're putting in your reps, the way you're communicating this, is there a way to, say, use TDCS or some electrical current in the brain or somewhere else in order to make the reps sink in faster? Or would that be like a form of cheating or somehow impure?
If it works, it's not cheating. You know what I mean?
I love that answer.
Like, a lot of the people, like, there's a lot of guys, like, we have a neuro-ophthalmologist that's a full instructor in PsyOcCali, and I was talking to him about the 40 years of experience, and I was a little nervous because he's like a real doctor, and I'm not. And I don't know that much about neurology, but I told him about it, and I was waiting for him to be like, nah, that's a joke. But he said, no, that's legitimate. It sounds extremely legitimate. And so we take everything. You can't be a master if you're not willing to consider everything. So when we research the TDCS, when you came to my house with some other guys, like, I had some of my friends there who were very knowledgeable, because we want it to be a dialogue. It's not about like who's better.
It's fun.
Yeah. And it's about sharing that information and making the rest of your tribe better. So absolutely, we, you know, all that stuff is going on, you know, and that's sort of why, like, you know, that's why I take a lot of pride in being here right now, because an instructor told me about coffee, and, you know, a couple years later, I'm here talking to you, and a lot of PsyOc guys are aware that there is this world out there, and they're able to use it or not use it according to, you know, their own personal formulas, because everybody's formula is different. You know, you have a personal success formula. I have a personal success formula, but, like, have you succeeded because your formula is so tight, or have you succeeded because in spite of all the bad reps you ever burned, you know?
Probably the latter for me.
Yeah, and me too, by the way. When I first started out in Hollywood, I was a very fear-based person.
Yeah.
My methodology behind writing a script was, I don't want to write the best script ever and touch people's lives. It was, I want to write a script that's so good it makes my colleagues at the show question why they chose this path in life. And that, you know, and that's some fire right there.
Yeah.
But that's also a lot of weight to carry around with you. And that is how you carry weight if you're by yourself and you're making yourself an isolationist. It's like Michael Jordan hated losing more than he liked winning. Think about how good Michael Jordan could have been if he wanted to make masters and he had a way to do it. Because there's a lot of master level people who are like, I just do what I do. Well, don't tell me that. How do you transfer it? How good are your guys?
That knowing how to do something and knowing how to teach something are very different skills.
Mm-hmm.
And early in my career, I spent 5 years teaching about 3 nights a week to other professionals to learn how to communicate knowledge really effectively, because I believed, I think rightly so, it was more of a hypothesis then, that was a core skill that would teach me more. And I learned my field. I became one of the top guys in my field because I taught it so many times.
Mm-hmm.
And this is similar to what you do with PsyOc. But at the same time, that ability to take a complex topic and then boil it down, I took that template and I moved it over to nutrition and human performance. But the hard thing is, how do you take masses of data points and bring it down? And it is a template.
Yeah.
And it's a thing that we learn. The question is, can we teach kids or young adults how to think about templates instead of how to just do stuff?
Yeah, and that's always when, you know, something that we talk about is the, like, headhunter tribes, like older cultures, they had a lot of things figured out. And we have created a lot of complications in life. And there are certain principles that are universal. So you talk about kids, right? I don't have kids. I would like to one day. Most of the guys in SIOC do have kids, right? So, and we were talking before about like when it goes down, you're going to be around your family. So we are a family-based art. So kids are always running around our seminars. And one of the first things they learn, what did kids do in the tribes, in the Philippines? They learn how to pass blades to their father. They learned how to hold them the right way. The women learned similar skills. So there was no one that was not helping. Because in a tribal culture in the jungle, if everyone does not contribute, you're not going to survive very long. Yeah. And I don't think it's very different right now on a Hollywood TV show or in corporate America. So if the formulas don't work for kids, then they're not universal.
I took what I learned at SIOC about passing a knife safely. Mm-hmm. Never thought of it before. And I taught both my kids.
Oh, so, great.
Yeah, we passed knives back and
Did
forth
they have
to the
fun?
Table. Oh, yeah, they think it's really cool.
That's
and,
very cool.
And interestingly, it's some kind of weird thing. Alan, you know, who's younger, but he's a boy, really into it. Anna, who's a girl, she learned, but just the fire wasn't there. And I have no idea if that's just a random because of who they are or if that's a gender-specific thing. But it surprised me because I would have thought Anna, who's loves to climb trees and do stuff, that she would have been into it. But it was kind of like, okay, I got the skill, I'm done. And Alan's more.
Because the blade is an emotional tool.
Yeah.
And boys, they like to swing swords.
Yeah.
They like to get rough with it. Women, they don't have the same type of emotional response to that. There are good and bad things to both. It's funny, I'm glad you said that you taught your kids because there's something in SIOC, it's a talk that I heard once from one of the master tuons, and I'd been doing SIOC for like only 6 months, and we were at this event called Sama Sama, and Sama Sama is like our biohacking conference in that everyone from around the world comes to one place. And every year we do something called the Sayao. The Sayao is this big bonfire, and we all have our blades, and we hear tribal drums, and we move around the fire. And why do we do this? Because in the tribes back in the Philippines, they would do this before they would go into battle. The fire is life, but it's also death. And you move close to the heat with your blade, and you feel the balance, the fine line between that. You feel what it is to be alive, and your family's around you. They're also moving. Your brother warriors are there, and you're also moving. And now what have you created? It's not about going out and killing someone the next day. It's about the process, right? You are in the alpha state, right? You are in the flow state. That's how they created it back then, right? So it was always a communal thing. And part of something that came out from that on my trip, before my first SIOC, one of the Tuans said, 10,000 hands. Let's talk about that. I always heard it in SIOC. I didn't know what it meant. And he said, in the tribes, we take our knowledge seriously. So like whenever I give you knowledge, I take it seriously because I know that I didn't earn it on my own solely. There are some things I figured out, but everything that was learned, someone out there paid the price in blood. For us to use a training blade and not a real blade, why do you think that happened? Because something went wrong back in the day. For us to target that one thing first and not the second thing first, that came from somewhere too. Someone paid the price in blood back there, right, before I was even around. And so the instructor said, when you draw your blade, you should not be afraid. Because even though you may be going out into a situation that is dangerous, that may cost you your life, when you draw your blade and you're a SIOC guy, you don't do it with one hand. 10,000 hands draw that blade with you. And when you were passing your children that blade, 10,000 hands passed that blade with you. And that moves me, and that's powerful, and that's awesome.
It's amazing, because I never would have conceived of there's a safe way of doing it where you're not going to drop the knife and all that. I grew up, I remember I got my first knife when I was, 8 or something. My dad gave me his pocket knife when he was a kid. And it was kind of an important thing.
Yeah.
And I remember that, but there was never like, okay, what do you do with it other than don't cut your fingers? There's some basic, cut away from yourself kind of stuff, but it wasn't formalized. So my kids are still a little bit too young to have their own pocket knife.
Yeah.
But I said, it's okay if they cut themselves, unless they cut off a finger. Knives are a great form of biofeedback.
Well, they probably won't because you taught them how to pass blades.
Exactly. So I bought each of them a little pocket knife, a little Victorinox.
Yeah.
And I said, well, guys, when you're ready to have a fire ceremony, so make it a very important thing for them, we'll do that. So we built a fire pit in the backyard.
You can have a SIO.
We could, right? And then I said, you guys want to do it? And they're like, nah. I said, okay. You're not ready.
Yeah, they're not ready.
Like, what? What? No, we're ready. No, we'll try again next month. Yeah. So they still haven't, earned their knives yet because the passion isn't there. But I think there's a huge emotional value in making it ceremonial.
There
for
is.
Kids as well.
There is. It's like life has consequences, and ultimately, you have to make things change for yourself.
It's totally true.
Yeah.
So now I get you as a martial artist more than I did before this.
Good.
Then you started doing 100 episodes or 100 mm-hmm. sessions of NeuroOptimal.
Yeah.
Okay, what happened in your life? NeuroOptimal is the home neurofeedback. You just hook it up to your head. What changed emotionally? What changed in your martial arts practice? What changed in your career from that level of neurofeedback, which is relatively light?
Something I had to get over in the beginning was looking for immediate results. You know, like if sometimes you can like pop a pill and you feel the results immediately. Mm-hmm. With neurofeedback, it's different. I had to be patient with myself. That part of the training too. Like, don't look for crazy results. You can't do it 100 times a day. You know, it goes back to process, and people would just tell me, I wouldn't feel it myself. They would say, Dave, you seem a little bit more calm. You don't stutter as much in conversation anymore.
Oh, you noticed that effect too?
Yeah. you know, it's funny because when you get a NeuroOptimal system, it tells you to list some things, some goals, right? Because you need some method of quantification. And I actually didn't look at it since I bought it. And so like the other day I looked at the goals and it was like, be more zen, you know, be kinder to people, you know, show them love, that kind of thing. And those are all things that happen. So a lot of it, it's funny because it's neurofeedback. If you're looking for the immediate value, you're almost getting in your own way. And that's what we were talking about at the speech today a little bit, which is hacking is like, it's pursuing something that's valuable and finding a better way to get there.
Yes.
Right? So, but it gets to a point when you are really doing elevated stuff, like with your brain, you can't hack. There's only so much you can hack. Eventually, someone has to say, I'm going to hook myself up to this computer, or I'm going to take this trip somewhere where it costs a lot of money and go through this crazy experience that no one can really describe to me. And at that point, it evolves past that value thing and it starts being about the process. It starts being about your life. So in my mind, you know, all the steps between the coffee and all this, the sleep induction mat, they lead you to the door of process. And that's what mastery is, you know? And that's what the neurofeedback technology of NeuroOptimal, that opened a door for me. But I had to walk through it, you know?
There's a whole process, because I would like all this to be free. The value to all of us when people's consciousness works better, it's very important. So I'm like, okay, breathing exercises, free. Heart rate variability training, $99.
Yeah.
And then you go to something like the upgraded focus brain trainer, moving blood to the front of your brain. You can pay attention better, including during meditation, right? And that's under $1,000. NeuroOptimal, hundreds of sessions of neurofeedback, which is $18 a session, but you gotta buy a lot of them. Apologies, you know, these are partners I work with, right?
Right.
And then the big one, the one that's done the most for me is 40 years of Zen, but you can see it's a template, it's a process. Yeah. Start small, do things, do they make a difference? Do you want to go to the next level? And for me, I've done 6.5, soon 7.5 full weeks with electrodes glued to my head, not counting my NeuroOptimal sessions. And like that's a significant amount of my life. But I've done it because it's gotten me out of my own way. Mm-hmm. And I don't know anything that's more effective or I would do that.
Yeah.
Now, you explained that you stuttered less, you felt more zen.
Yeah.
You were like more emotionally...
More like open with giving love, expressing love to people.
From NeuroOptimal.
Well, so that got me going.
Go in the door and you said, I see that my brain will change. Yeah. And then you went to 40 years
of Zen. Yeah, I would not have gone 40 years of Zen without NeuroOptimal.
Okay.
You know, it's a great kind of doorway into that next level.
It's seeing what your brain does when it can see itself.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, and what happened post 40 years of Zen? Like, what were the changes you experienced?
I've been twice. I'm going back a third time in December. The first time, it was really about clearing out my own mind, working on myself. Yeah. And the second time, I realized that I had done a pretty good job of that, and my alpha brainwaves were kind of plateauing, and the next step of it was sharing this awesome world I have inside my heart with people, which can sound a little new agey, right? a little, but you know, for things to become alive, like I've been talking about tribe the whole time, right?
Yeah.
Kids, this and that, dancing around the fire. I mean, dancing around the fire by yourself is not the same thing as doing it with your brothers, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not the same thing as doing it with your family. So this, you know, every time you go, new things happen. You are able to control new parts of your brain. That's part of the process. You don't just do the same thing over and over and over again. Just going once, by the way, is life-changing. I didn't think I was going to go back again, but, you know, decisions led me to that point, right? But it's a progressive practice. It is like martial arts for your brain.
Very much,
you know, on a subconscious level. And the funny thing is, after doing it, I came back, and who am I going to talk to about it? you know, I could talk to you.
Yeah.
And of course I talked to some Tuhans about it, you know, and they were all kind of nodding. Like they had never done neurofeedback before, but they were at a level in their lives where they had earned the reps where they knew exactly what I was talking about. They were like, you know, they know what alpha is. You know?
There are spiritual masters from many different disciplines who get here.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is that I was a cloud computing guy, not a spiritual master.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about this stuff when I was young. And I was able to find the faster path.
Yeah.
And the idea of meditating is attractive to me, except that, well, I could play with my kids or I could meditate.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to play with my kids. I would like to meditate, but there will be a trade-off. What if, you know, when I do meditate, I have rubber bumpers and buzzers when I do it wrong. Mm-hmm. So I won't waste even 1 second in ineffective meditation. To me, that's a beautiful thing. That's an ideal, like the pursuit of perfection, the idea of getting more in less time.
Yeah.
So that was what attracted me to it. And to be honest, that's what attracted me to the second time that I've done it and the other times. The first time what attracted me was I actually said, well, if the average person gets 12 IQ points, divide by, it's like $1,000 an IQ point, like that, I'll put that on my Discover card because I didn't have cash in the bank for that. I was between jobs.
Yeah.
But it was like, it was so worth it. And that wasn't actually the full 40 years of Zen program. That was a full form of neurofeedback, but without the nutritional and the coaching stuff that I've since put around it.
Right.
And it made a difference for me. So,
you know, something we talked about the first time, I said, there's not many people you can talk about it with. And I got a chance to do my, you know, you do the complimentary coaching call when you enroll in the program. So I got a chance to do it with you after I was done.
That was cool.
And it was, you know, it was great because I could finally talk to someone about it. And something I remember you said was, it's great that you can express it this way. You know, like I was trying to express myself in a way that was my experience. I was not a spiritual guy. I still wouldn't qualify myself as like some new agey guy.
Yeah.
I understand there's things that have not been quantified in life. But when you say meditation, people think that you're going to be in a lotus position still with no mind for like hours and hours. And for some people that works. What 40 Years of Zen did for me was because it shows you the feeling, it quantifies scientifically the feeling you get when you're in a high alpha state. And by the way, what they do there is not that type of meditation. You are thinking about things all the time.
You're working your ass off.
Your brain is working. And so a lot of people think, I can't think about nothing for a week. And afterwards, and this is the big thing, if you cannot take the training with you, then it's not of value.
Yeah.
You have to be able to do it when you leave too. And so that leads me to like, okay, so I don't have the chamber. I don't have the electrodes. What is my own meditation? Because if I hold myself to someone else's definition of meditation, I'm never going to get it. So my meditation is I'm writing a script and I'm coming to a point where something in my mind says, time to quit, Dave, or that line sucks, or you should start over. It's my ego, right? I recognize that now because I'm more aware. My observer persona has been cultivated.
Yeah.
So I can see that without emotion. And so what's my meditation? I do not light candles and incense. I have not painted my walls of my room any particular color. What I do is I get up and there's a blade, I have a blade in my drawer and this long, and I take it out to my backyard and I move with the blade. And I don't want people to think that I'm moving like Bruce Lee, because I'm not. It's moving meditation. It moves like this. You barely see it moving, because it's not about the emotional value of taking that cut there. It's just me moving. And I am mindful now, because there's a weight in my hand and there are consequences to it. And really after 5 minutes of that, I'm up and ready to go back into it. I'm in full alpha state. Now, I'm not suggesting that anyone in your audience without training pick up a blade and go out and do that. That is how I trigger it. And what I would encourage people to do is think about whether they go to 40 Years of Zen or do a neurooptimal or whatever, what is their mode of meditation? You know, because it's not a one size fits all thing.
Not at all.
You know, and so some people, everyone has experienced that alpha flow state in some point in their lives. And so 40 Years of Zen lets you know exactly what it is. But then you need to do the work afterwards of how do I recreate this in my life every day? You know, and it doesn't take, you don't have to buy all these toys when you get to that point. It's like having that state of mind where you know what it takes to get yourself there, you know?
Very, very well put. Dave, there's a question every guest on the show has answered.
Oh, yeah.
And you prepped ahead of time. I have no idea. But top three recommendations for people who want to kick more ass? You've kicked ass in your career. You're a kick-ass martial artist. You're just a cool guy.
I gave this one a lot of thought because I listened to your podcast all the time. And I realized that, so what is kicking ass? It's the result of a lot of things, right? Yeah. It's the result of training, right? Mm-hmm. Of preparing yourself for life. And so my three things, they're questions, you know? How do you respond to life? Because there's three different ways. The first way is a reflexive response. That is when something happens that you're not expecting and you cover up physically or emotional and you have no control over that. It's a reflex. Anyone goes through that. That is what happens when you haven't been mindful about your life. The second type of response is the conditioned response, which is you have actually been mindful of the consequences, had some training for yourself, and now you know how to do it, but the problem is it takes thought. And in that moment of thought, you could lose that situation. So you've got the reflexive, the conditioned, the third one is the correct response. And that is when you have trained so much that the conditioned responses are now reflexive. So you're doing it without thought and you're in a state of flow. So everyone in your audience can ask themselves those questions. When I go in a situation, am I responding reflexively, conditioned, or am I correct? There's a lot of people that do things correct. And if you are not in that correct response phase, I would encourage them to think about being more mindful about life and thinking of a formula to get themselves to that point, whatever it may be. It may be SIOC, it may be knitting in a sewing circle. Whatever it is, I guarantee people can analyze it that way. And if life is one rep, do not waste it.
Dave, I think people know where they can watch your TV show. Anywhere else you want to send them?
CBS, Mondays at 10. If you like what I've been talking about with SIOC, you can go to SIOC.com. That's SAYOC.com. A lot of information there. We got training groups everywhere. Women, children, guys do it like me. And it's a lot of fun. It's a whole world, and we'd love to have you. And thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah, awesome.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.